You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
And it's that day and time in which we're joined by Pat Gerwin. He of NFL Radio's Moving the Chains, CBS's NFL Today Show. Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 is when you can hear Pat on the radio. He is headed to Detroit next week to broadcast the draft once again. Pat joins us courtesy of Pinchers, Pinchers, Tampa to Key West, all points in between, Pinchers, where you can't fake fresh. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I steal from you guys whenever I can, and so I don't really have a daily poll question, but I put one up yesterday, and I couldn't believe the amount of optimism in the National Football League from fans. So here's what I asked them. First off, no draft since 2010 has had six quarterbacks go in the first round. None. Five, a couple times. So I asked this question. Will this year's first-round draft quarterbacks be as good as the class of 2020? Almost every one of them said yes. And I was like, please. Here's class of 2020. Joe Burrow, Tua, Justin Herbert, and Jordan Love. That was the first round. That's four successful guys that are definitely all playing on a second contract or more. And most of the people who call their show, this class is going to be just as good. Do you guys think this class is going to be as good as that group?
No.
No.
Yeah, me either. And they thought it was an easy answer. I go, oh boy, we're not ready for the draft. We got to have reality check week.
You buying that the Patriots picks up for sale?
I say this about Elliot. It's, you know, his dad is Ron Wolfo. I worked with, he was just a kid when I knew him, but I think it's really hard for brand new guys, with brand new coach to pull a trigger on a trade. He'll get nervous about the compensation package. He'll get nervous about how far down he has to go and what will he get. He needs a quarterback. Now, if someone convinces him Bo Nix is your guy, he could probably move down some spots and get it. My experience will tell me that he's gonna get a little shaky on trade day, whenever that is, and that should be, day of the draft, the third pick.
Well, also we're gonna have to use some common sense here, some basic human nature. Kraft took a back seat for 20 plus years.
That's why he won.
I understand that, but you know how owners think. You know how big ego people, successful ego people think. Kraft wants to take some of his power and control back with his team. He did it first by getting rid of Bill, and now he's handpicked guy. And what has he said publicly? We need a quarterback. I mean, come on. Elliott Wolf has to give his boss what he wants. He's got to draft him a quarterback, doesn't he?
He's going to draft the quarterback. The question is where? And when you move down, you can't predict what's going to happen to you. So I don't think they're going to leave. And I think they're down to Drake May or McCarthy. That's what I think. I don't think they're bold enough to take Penix. I don't think they take Bo Nix at three. So they're down to those two guys. And that's what I think. You know, he'll pull a trigger on one and tell the world why he was number one on their board. We also know how that works. Oh, we got the guy we had number one on our board. Oh, really? I'd be nervous to see the rest of your board.
Does Washington having a QB conference mean that they're going to trade, or are they just trying to be too smart for the room?
No, I think they know what they're going to do. They're going to take Jaden Daniels, and I think they – what did they say yesterday? We're very, very close to our decision. And a day from now, they'll be even closer as the draft comes closer. So, no, they know what they're going to do. And they got lots. They've injected a lot of veterans on the roster. I think there's 15 of them, and they got a lot of picks. And they're going to land up, I think, moving around. This is what you guys talked about the other day. They can move up and down all they want, especially up. They got enough to go do it. So they're going to be happy with what they did. If they take Jaden Daniels, they're going to be. You know what? I believe them if they say that was the number one guy on our board. He'd be the number one guy in mine if I had a board. But boards cost $10 million to make. So I love when guys call my show going, on my board? Really? You have a board in your house? Name your scouting department. How many times did you send your kids out to workouts?
I believe it's a piece of paper, a pen, and a .com. Yeah. Is his board. Washington with six of the top 100, by the way. A 1, 2, 2s, 3, 3s.
And that's a hammer shot for them. Out of that, just playing the probability game, they should be able to get three starters and one or two role players.
At a minimum, right, Pat? I mean, yeah. If they do it right, it's four or five starters.
Yeah, but, you know, like Detroit did that, and we acknowledged it all year as one of the best drafts in a long time. Seattle did it a couple of years ago. It's very hard to get that many guys. And if they didn't sign 15 veterans, most of them look like backups to me, but those guys will be a little ahead of schedule when it comes to camp and getting ready. So I'm talking about opening day, three starters and one or two role players. I think that's a really good – if you do that in a draft, you've done well.
Is McCarthy worthy of a top 10 pick?
Not to me, but it's close. It's you know, I've had conversations with people that love him. I've had conversations with people that think he's a systems guy, and if you don't put him in the right system, he's not going to flourish. And we both, all three of us, know what the right system is. Run, play action. And it's easy to say that kind of stuff when we're on a show like this or even in summer camp. It's not real easy when you're losing by 10 points in the fourth quarter. Run, play action's over. Sooner or later, your opponent's going to make you a pass guy. And I don't think people know enough about him to think he can do that. So that's where I think the mystery is.
The people who love him, what do they say about the lack of throwing in college? Was it just from the workouts? Where is it? Or was there enough balls, enough certain passes that he made that they feel comfortable with him?
Yeah, the guys that like him loved him in the red zone. They like his escapability. Phil, I told Phil the other day, we had a nice discussion about this guy, and I said, Phil, I don't believe all of his scrambles are scrambles. I think they have built-in dash pass, which is the old John Elway stuff, which is drop back, set the thing, and then escape predictably and telling your line, we're dash left. And now, just talking to Roman Wilson, I kind of accused him of it. I said, look, there's too many times. You're just run the exact same route every time he breaks the pocket. And it looks like it's been practiced. He looks for you. It's how Tyler Lockett is and was for Seattle. So I do think they played to his strengths. But, again, when you look at the number of pass attempts for these quarterbacks, you start with Bo Nix with over 1,900 pass attempts in college. You've got almost all these guys are in the 1,400, 1,500, 1,300. And then you get to him, and it's like 600 or something. So that's why people get nervous.
How do you judge Bo Nix, though, when 1,000 of those 1,900 passes were at or behind the line of scrimmage? And I'm not being snarky here. I'm being serious. I mean, I understand there are a lot of short passing offenses in the NFL, but not as short passing as Oregon's, if you know what I mean, Pat. I mean, yeah. So how do you judge him?
Well, the way coaches and – once that comes up as an accusation, which is your question, hey, what about his deep ball? What about his, you know, throw out the bubbles? It's like when I do running backs, I never evaluate third down runs. It's third and 15. You hand the guy a draw. I am throwing that play right out. I'm going to give you 10 yards before I tackle him. So when it comes to this quarterback, you got to dig into the tape and go, give me all of his deep balls. All right. Well, what's the definition of a deep ball? Over 20 yards. Let's just use that number. When he throws the ball over 20 yards, can I see that tape, please? Well, when you look at that tape from last year, you're going to see 50 throws. Is that a lot of throws? No. Is it too small to evaluate? No, you can evaluate 50 throws. I think it's 50%, which is pretty normal. Remember the old days when everyone was a 50% completion guy? Well, he was 50% and he threw for 1,000 yards on deep balls, over 13 yards a catch. So if you want to, you know, modify your view of him, you've got to break down all these areas. Okay, how's he against the blitz? Well, when you see the blitz, you know that a lot of those bubble screens come out and ball's gone before they get there. But yet, people did blitz him. You want to look at that reel? There's 125 plays by him throwing the ball against the blitz. I think he completed 85 of them. So he's handled the blitz. And if you want to throw out the bubbles and just look at, did he throw the ball down the field? How did he do? You know, there's a lot to like in there, but it's he's got enough plays in college, for God's sake, to break down any dimension you want. And I don't think it talks you into taking him. But it's not like, you know, when I was talking to you guys about JJ, I hear this all the time. Well, he's only a fastball thrower. So I just said, oh, I'm going to keep watching tape till I see change of pace throws. And I found them, not a lot of them, mostly to the tight end, but he does have occasional soft touch. It's not like Colin Kaepernick, who just threw hard balls every time. But you got to do that kind of work, and it's hard.
You know, the intangible part of the QB thing, because all these guys can throw it. We get it. A lot of them can move. But it's all they always talk about the it factor. When you've interviewed these guys, Pat, which guy has the it factor to you?
It's great because I've talked to just about all of them now, I think. I didn't talk to McCarthy. I think Jaden Daniels has it, and it's kind of an interesting – his confidence kind of oozes out of him. He's not abrasive with his teammates. They like him. They listen to him. And I think he'll transition to the NFL game with that personality. I also feel like Penix is kind of like a – he knows he's a gunslinger. And I think he's going to be a guy that's going to win the confidence of his teammates at practice the way he throws. And he's a good guy. I don't know about the kid from USC. I really don't know if he has that, Mark. That, to me, I think it's going to be hard for it to surface. He's quirky enough that people are going to judge him on some of the things he says, does. And they might not buy into him. That part of him scares me.
It is fascinating. The Bears have done virtually no anything with any of the other quarterbacks. And quite frankly, they haven't done a ton with him either. It's like they made up their decision in December and there's no need to invest any more time in it. Pat, we've got about 30 seconds. You like to play the where will guys fall game.
Yeah.
Where do you think, if you want to grab Penix and Nix, how patient can you be?
Nix maybe a little more, but Penix, I think, is now, I mean, 2 weeks ago, we had, if you asked me that 2 weeks ago, I'd say early second round. Right now, I'm going to say he's going to be one of the first round guys, probably the Raiders. I would think people are starting to realize the guy handles the blitz. We talked about this. He got sacked once every 12 blitz calls on him. He's got a rifle, and he's got an NFL arm, and he's got big hands. This is Phil Sims loves this. Outdoor teams, although the Raiders aren't, give me a big-handed quarterback, pump fakes, everything else come off the size of that hand.
More with Pat Kerwin coming up on the other side right here on Miller and Moulton.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour, remaining moments with Pat Kerwin, NFL Radio's Moving the Chains. You and Jim doing a mock draft today?
No, today's the fans mock draft. They had to sign up as GMs, and they stormed the gate. Now, we got like 3 and 4 applicants for every team. We picked the people that we thought would do a good job, and they have to be by their phone all day as we go through the picks. And they get a minute and a half or so to tell us who was on their short list for the position, 3 or 4 guys that you were targeted, who you're going to take, why, if – we don't let them trade, but if you were going to trade, who would you trade with? Just give them a chance to be a GM for a minute or two. And then at the end of it, we vote on the worst GM of the day. And they're real nervous about that job. And the best GM of the day. So that we try to create a little pressure on the guys. Nothing's funnier, Mark, than when a guy picks someone who was already picked. Like he's not paying attention. I'm taking Mark Miller. And when he comes, he goes, it's clear. I'm taking Mark Miller. Well, that's interesting. He was picked 10 picks ago. You should have been paying attention. Dumbest GM of the year.
But moving the chains today, 3 to 7, Pat with his co-host Jim Miller. And I guess they're doing their fan mock draft, which I used to do 20 years ago. But when Miller and Moulton joined forces, Mark said, listen, you can name the show whatever you want, but I have one request. We get rid of the fan mock draft.
And that's only because he allowed trades.
I did.
And, Pat, these listeners were trading Hall of Famers for first-round picks. And I'm like, David and I were separate at the time. I listened to a turn. I'm like, no, no, no. We're not. We're not allowing Derek Brooks to get traded for a first round pick. It's not happening.
Yeah, I think
I'm with you guys, and we of course have eliminated. There are no trades because they'd be insane, and they still have a good time when we make them. We start. We have a laugh button.
Gotcha.
We have the Jeopardy music when the guy's humming and hawing.
You should use that on the real show. All right. So what do you think Sean Payton is going to do at quarterback? He obviously doesn't have his future quarterback in-house. Maybe he thinks he doesn't have to get his future quarterback this year. But what do you think he's going to do with the draft at 12?
I think he's going to move down a few spots and take Bo Nix. If the other five quarterbacks are gone and there's no threat of a quarterback from the next four or five teams, I think he's going to try to look shrewd, move down a few spots, grab an extra pick. So now when he announces it, we got Bo Nix and a two. You know, he's something that sounds as a package, like he was pretty slick.
Well, and Denver doesn't have a second round pick also.
Correct.
And so you could see where Denver would want to move down from 12. But so let's just say the four quarterbacks go in the top 10. Nix and Penix are still on the board. You expect the Broncos to trade out.
I would think that the Broncos, now, by saying that, that means that you're going to go down below the Raiders.
Correct.
And the Raiders still have the opportunity to take a quarterback. But I think, and this is Phil Simms says it too, he just thinks Bo Nix is more Sean's kind of guy. And he knows Sean very well. He thinks the guy is just does a lot of things. And he's real disciplined to his offense, which frustrated him about Russell. Russell's an ad-lib guy. You know, Bo Nix is not an ad-lib guy. He's going to play the system, and he's seen it all, and he's done it all. So I think it'll be his guy. But I think he feels like, he wouldn't say this, but he's got to get a little something extra besides taking Bo Nix. So if he can tell the world he got a two and Nix, he's going to be happy.
Mark, I'm going to make a prediction. It's either the Steelers or the Packers who trade up to 12. And I think they're going to both do it for Brian Thomas, wide receiver, LSU. Because I don't think he'll be on the board much longer.
I agree with that. He's pushed his way into that elite group. And it wasn't hard for him. He's a very good player.
Looking at the receivers, Pat, when you're getting rid of the top three or four guys, but when you're looking at that next group, that second round, what's the most important thing for you? Is it depend on what the team need? Are you looking for size guys? You know, I mean, you know, I see Coleman, who can't run, that doesn't run a great 40, but he's big. He's a great red zone presence. And then there's other guys like the kid from Texas who can burn. What is it you're looking for?
Well, it depends on what I already have. So if you're good at the X and the Z, now you're looking for a slot guy, you're already thinking, I can get the slot guy later in the second round, maybe near the bottom of the second round. If you don't have a vertical threat guy, this team's with a lot of big guys that run 4.5. And obviously you're looking for a 4.2, 4.3 guy, you're looking at Worthy from Texas. So it's at this point, if you don't have a number one receiver, which a lot of teams don't, a guy that will command double coverage, and you haven't picked in those top four receivers, good luck. I don't think you're going to find one that's going to be what we call a true one. And some guys, I mean, did you see Brandon Bean's comment? Speaking of that subject, we're looking for selfless players, not number one options. So I think some guys are looking, you know, it's specific to what you want. If you need a guy that can run the jet sweep, and that's a Z, and you want a guy like that, you know, that's got some athleticism to him, then you're looking for that. I just think there's there's a couple of each of those around. It's not like there's only one slot guy, there's only one X. There's X's, there's speed, and then there's power guys. Like some teams are gonna want to love Xavier Leggett, the South Carolina kid. You know, if you try to build a model that looks like the 49ers, or you come from the 49er tree as a coach, that's the guy you want. Because you've been there, like when Debo Samuel's busting tackles, that's what they're looking for, and that's the kind of guy you'd be looking at.
Do you think there are enough quality wide receivers that if you're Buffalo and Kansas City at the end of the second round, that you can grab a guy who will jump in and be one of your top three? Because otherwise, if you don't think that, Pat, they both clearly then need to go wide receiver with their first round pick.
Yeah, so at the bottom of the first round, you know, that Mitchell kid from Texas, I think, has fallen a little bit. He's got some issues. And I didn't think they'd surface this early, but they did yesterday. So, you know, but he's a very talented player. If you can handle some of the personality quirks that come along with him, he's diabetic, doesn't take his medicine, all that craziness. But we knew there was a medical card on him. I just didn't know what, and I wasn't going to announce what it was or say it, but it came out yesterday. So now we know. Look, in the bottom of the second round, where Franklin's going to be, and Mitchell, I think, is now going to be, and Wilson from Michigan, you can get a guy in there. I think that group is not going to run out of gas until maybe the third or fourth round.
Okay.
I also think there's going to be 10 or 11 receivers in the first two rounds.
Oh, I think there'll be at least 12. At least, I mean, I got a 13 in front of me here. I'd be surprised if any of them make it to the third round.
Yep. Hey, everyone plays three wides now. So it's a position that calls for more talent.
When do organizations start conducting mock drafts in-house? Is that this weekend?
Probably today. You know, I know one guy called me and said, and they assign guys to teams. So a guy can hone in. Each scout might get a team to get ready for, and they'll get the coaches in there. So one guy called me and said, hey, I got this team. What do you think of them? I said, you're not doing the work yourself? He goes, I do, but, you know, you guys do this every day. So it is interesting. They're just trying to predict the flow of where it's going to be. Do they have to move down? Do they have to move up? You know, most of them have already talked to teams about potential trades. That doesn't mean they're going to, but you got to start. Even if you don't like to trade, you're probably taking calls and thinking about it if the compensation's right. I think a couple teams have already said – they haven't, what, didn't the Patriots already say they didn't get offered enough to even consider a trade yet?
Right. They basically begged yesterday, hey, make your best offer, otherwise we're going to stand pat and take quarterback.
Yeah. And I think the frustration for the trade uppers is that I don't think the Arizona wants to trade down.
I don't know why they would. They've got so many picks. It doesn't make sense to me, Pat.
Just take your best receiver and get on with the draft.
Well, in theory, then the Chargers can put their bid up for auction, and they all but announced yesterday that they are.
Yep.
So he's Pat Kerwin, NFL Radio Moving the Chains, CBS's NFL Today show. Pat joining us courtesy of Pinchers. Pinchers, Tampa to Key West, about a dozen locations in between Pinchers where you can't fake fresh. Pat, have a great weekend. Thanks so much for your time. The Heat are facing elimination tonight. We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton. Exclusively on the Florida Sports Network.
22 minutes before the hour. If you've missed any part of Miller and Moulton, go to millerandmoulton.com. millerandmoulton.com. Last hour, Henry Yoho talking Lightning and Panthers from the Lightning perspective. We had David Dwork on yesterday talking it from the Panthers perspective, so you could download that as well. Just had Pat Kerwin on. Going to talk to new NHLer Gavin Brindley coming up at the top of the bonus hour. But right now, it's Groundhog Day. Same situation as a year ago. Heat facing elimination in the play-in. Alejandro Solana, part of the Heat Radio Network. You can also hear him on 560 QAM in Miami. Follow him on X at Alex, the letter M, Solana, S-O-L-A-N-A. Alex, it's David and Mark. How are you?
I'm good, guys. I'd be feeling a lot better if we had today off and we'd be gearing up for a Heat-Knicks first-round playoff series. But here we are again, gentlemen. It's the Miami Heat. They like it the hard way, and this will definitely be the hardest possible way to get another run out of this year's playoffs.
Well, how do they do it without Jimmy Buckets? I mean, this is going to be a tough task. Not just, I mean, if they get through tonight, it gets even tougher. But how do they get through tonight?
Yeah, well, they get through tonight, in my opinion, by getting through, you know, the other 22 games that he missed this season. Jimmy missed 22 games, and we know, right? That's part of, and it has been part of the Jimmy Butler era in Miami, where he's going to miss, you know, 20 to 25 games per season, going to play 60 of the 82 regular season games. So the good news here is that at least the Miami Heat had some sort of continuity playing all their depth and all their guys without Jimmy Butler this season. They were 13-9 in the regular season when Jimmy didn't play, and usually Jaime Jaquez Jr., the rookie out of UCLA, starts in his place, and he does a lot of the things that Jimmy Butler does. Look, I'm not comparing him to Jimmy Butler. That would be ridiculous, but he does a lot of the things Jimmy Butler does, and I think that's going to be the strategy tonight, where you start Jaime, but the reality is, how do they get it done tonight? It's got to be Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo. They have to be the two best players on the floor tonight, and the Heat talk a lot about their depth, guys like Caleb Martin, Haywood Highsmith. We saw some good minutes from Kevin Love and DeLon Wright the other night as well. Those guys have to play well tonight on the Heat home floor, where Miami has not been good this season, okay? Their home record this year was really, really bad. One of the worst ones they've had in over a decade down in Miami. So, you know, when you think about how they can win a must-win game without their best player, you look at that roster, you say, Tyler Hero the other night, 9 of 27 from the floor, just not good enough. I mean, he has to be more efficient, and Bam Adebayo, as well as he played, and as tough as that task is to cover Joel Embiid all night, only 9 shot attempts and 10 points is also just not good enough against the Bulls team that we know can put up a lot of points. So Tyler and Bam have to be your two best players, and the rest of that unit really has to come up, knock down threes, play really well on the defensive end, which we know they're capable of. That's the key to beating the Chicago Bulls.
How concerned are you about Butler for the future? I mean, he's going to be 35 when, you know, they show up for training camp next year. This knee seems to be something that is going from I can live with and work around to maybe it's going to be more than that. I mean, I thought in the second half of this season he looked a little different, a little slower. Am I reading too much into it? Has Jimmy Buckets started the decline?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I don't get outraged when people say that. But here's what I'll say about, you know, the latter part of your question, where in the second half of the season he looked a little slower and perhaps like he was declining. When you look back at the Jimmy Butler era here in Miami, this was pretty commonplace where he would play 60 to 65 games. Again, like this isn't something that he only did last year and this year where the Heat were in the playing tournament. You look back at the season where the Heat were the one seed in the Eastern Conference, it was pretty much the same deal. Same thing in that 2020 season, which I know was cut short because of the pandemic. But, you know, Jimmy Butler didn't play all those regular season games either. The Heat banked on, hey, this is how we take the regular season. We prioritize our guys feeling good for the postseason. And you run a risk with that. That's just the reality. You run a risk of playing with fire. And if you do end up in the playing game, rather than, you know, playing with a full roster during the regular season, and all they needed to do was win 2 or 3 more games. And if you go look back at the Heat's record or schedule, rather, you'll see 2 or 3 games that they lost that were just ridiculous losses, okay? I mean, at home against Washington, speaking of the Bulls, back in November, they played a game in Chicago where they opened up the game on a 22-1 run. They had a 22-1 lead and lost that game. So there's a lot of games you can look at and say, hey, you lost those games, you put yourself in this situation. But this is what the Heat have been doing with Jimmy Butler. So when I look at his regular season statistics and you kind of compare them over the years, there's no doubt his numbers dropped a little bit this year. Okay, there's absolutely no doubt. And can you attribute that to him getting older, him and his body maybe just not being able to hold up, you know, an 82-game regular season schedule at this age? It's fair. There's no doubt about it. But as far as the knee injury goes, you know, this is a pretty common injury in the NBA. Not that everybody sustains an MCL injury, but, you know, it's not like tearing your ACL where you have to go under, 6 to 8 months of rehab. I mean, potentially he could have been back over, you know, the next 4 to 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, depending how this goes. So I don't think this specific injury is something that we have to be concerned about for next season. But big picture, yeah, I think it's fair. You know, can Jimmy Butler be the best player on a team that's going to win an NBA title at 35 years old? I don't know. And so far, despite all the incredible runs that he's put on in the postseason, Miami hasn't been able to get over that mountaintop. So I think this offseason, you know, Pat Riley and Andy Ellisberg, Mickey Arison, the Heat's owner, certainly those will be conversations they're having, right? Because it's not an outlandish question to think, hey, can a 35-year-old who just underwent a tough injury at the end of the season and has struggled staying healthy for the course of 82 games over the past couple of years that he's been here, can he be the absolute best player on your team to go and lead you to a title? There's no doubt that you want to avoid this situation, which is having to play in a play-in tournament game. That's not ideal for Miami. Even if last year they set the precedent that they can get out of it, you want to avoid that because look at what happens, again, when you play with fire. You take that risk of having to play an extra game and your best player getting injured for what you were hoping to be another deep playoff run. The Heat have to figure out a way to not be in that situation next season. They wanted to go after Dame Lillard in the offseason, this past offseason. For whatever reason, Joe Cronin refused to talk with the Miami Heat, and it is what it is, right? Dame ends up in Milwaukee, but it's not like they haven't gone out and tried to make trades to go find a true number one or another number two to play next to Bam and Jimmy. It just hasn't worked out for the front office the way that they hope, but I can't imagine a situation, whether they lose tonight or whether they end up winning this game and they go play Boston. I feel like we all kind of know what's going to end up happening there in a series against Boston without Jimmy Butler. I have a hard time believing that Pat Riley, Andy Ellisberg, and that Heat front office is going to kick up their feet and say, oh, we'll run it back again next year with this trio.
Yep.
I'm not suggesting that, you know, any of those three will be on the chopping block. I don't know. I don't know what direction they're going to take it in, but there's no way they're not going to try to improve this roster next year.
And Dame already hates it in Milwaukee, so who knows what that'll bring in the offseason. But back to tonight's game. Hey, they've got to play this in the mud. I know you don't worry about point spreads and things like that, but the over-under is 205. I would think if the Heat win this game, it's going to be an under. Don't you think they've got to keep this to right around 100 aside?
Yeah, and look, the reality is the Heat struggle to score 100 points. I mean, they hit the century mark, and they start pumping in pepas at the Kaseya Center. So, look, the Heat have to do it defensively. It's how they had that 14-point lead against Philadelphia, right? I mean, you basically were just turning them over. The Heat play a press-to-zone defense. So you'll see that all game long, especially when defensively, you know, they're allowing easy buckets, easy opportunities at the rim. But, look, Kobe White can't go off for 42 like he did against Atlanta. And DeMar DeRozan can't go off for 30 or 40 points, which you know he's capable of. Miami has to win this game on the defensive end. Easy turnovers leading to easy buckets on the other end. That's what's going to jumpstart their offense. And we know that because that's been the precedent all season long. The Heat in the half court are not efficient offensively, especially without Jimmy Butler. And if your threes aren't going in, Miami is going to struggle to score 100 points, period, end of story. We know that over an 82-game sample size, that's who this team is. They have to win it on the defensive end. They have to limit Kobe White in transition. They have to make DeMar DeRozan take tough shots. And you just hope that nobody, named Nicholas Batum shows up in a Bulls jersey tonight, because that's ultimately what did the Heat in Philadelphia. It wasn't Joel Embiid. It wasn't Tyrese Maxey. It was the most difficult part of that game, other than the Jimmy injury, is that you lost the game to Nicholas Batum, who all of a sudden turned into prime Steph Curry.
Alejandro Solana, he's part of the Heat Radio Network. You can also hear him on 560 QAM in Miami. Follow him on X at Alex, the letter M, Solana, S-O-L-A-N-A. Alejandro, for your sake and for Heat fans, hope you get a W tonight so you can keep on being a part of the Heat Radio Network for a few weeks longer, and hopefully we can talk to you down the road.
That's the plan, gentlemen. Look forward to talking to you during the Celtics series. Thank you.
Thank you. And remember, a year ago, Mark, they played the Bulls in this game, and they were losing with 4 minutes to go at home. And then 2 months later, they're in the finals.
And remember, Alejandro just booked himself for next week.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah, well, and I hope for the Heat's sake that they at least get by Chicago tonight. I think they lose tonight.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
I love the Heat tonight.
Yeah, I actually like the Bulls tonight. Bulls score against everybody. Bulls hit shots. Heat give up mid-range jumpers. The Bulls live for mid-range jumpers. I think DeMar DeRozan's the leading scorer in the game tonight.
If that's the case, well, I think the Bulls win as well. I just know Jimmy Butler. They barely won this game last year with Jimmy Butler. I don't see how they pull it off tonight.
Tyler Herro game.
You know, but this is a fascinating where the Heat are, not to spend a ton of time on them, but, you know, Orlando Osagiri, who even last year when they went to the finals, he's like, listen, Bam is needs to be your third best player on the team, not your second best. Tyler Hero, he's like, don't believe in him. Sorry. Think he's tradable. You know, yeah, it can be good one night, bad the next. You know, fourth or fifth best starter is what he needs to be on your team. And I just sense, you know, like the Hawks just lost. And they're talking about where are places that Trae Young could end up. And I got to, you know, there are teams that jump out. Brooklyn jumps out. What about the Heat? I mean, see, I think Jimmy has begun the decline.
There's no doubt that Jimmy's begun the decline. It's just okay. At what rate he's declining, if you know what I mean.
I understand, but... but can Jimmy, and I don't care that he only plays 60 games in the regular season. I need Jimmy Butler for the spring. Okay, so I just, but can he be my second best player on a contending team in the spring? That's what I'm curious about, because he's 35 in September. You know, not everybody can be LeBron. In fact, most can't. Most at 35, they're out of the league. Never mind your best player, your second best player. So, you know, they're to me, the Heat are in a very interesting spot. Are Bam and Tyler Hero good enough that you can go try to find one other guy to put with them and you're a championship contender? Or do you actually need to use them to get your star and then try to put people around them?
And I think it's the latter, because I don't think you can build a team around the two of them. I don't, I'm more on the Big O side. When it comes to that, I don't think they can be 2 and 3. I think they can be 3 and 4, if you know what I mean. I don't know where you're the more of the association guy than either of us, Trent. Do you think you can win a championship building a team around Bam and Tyler Hero?
Probably not. Probably not. I'm with you.
And remember, 3 years ago, Trae Young had the Atlanta Hawks 2 games from the NBA Finals. Now, I know his stock now is not what it was then, you know, but Trae Young had the Hawks to a place the franchise has literally never been since they were in St. Louis. 2 games from the finals. And he's available. Just throwing it out there.
Miller and Moulton. Heat and Bulls tonight. Play-in game. Loser leaves town match.
Come on, Heat. Let's go.
I'm right there with you. Hey. I want the Heat to win. I'd like to see the Magic win their series. I'm the only, you know, I love seeing Panthers and Lightning. I just wanted it to be the second round so they both win a first round series. I'm for content on this show, not teams from Florida getting knocked out.
What's going to make the show better?
Right.
That's our poll question, by the way, of the NBA and NHL teams in Florida that are in the playoffs. Who's going to have the deepest run? Heat, Magic, Panthers, Lightning. Those are your obvious choices. Vote accordingly.
No one voting for the Heat, by the way.
Well, I don't know. Think about it. Panthers and Lightning are playing each other, so one of them is going to get to the second round. I don't think anybody thinks either of the NBA teams is going to get to the second round. Gavin Brindley of the Blue Jackets is next.